How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, Happy Friday! Then you check your phone quickly and discover today is actually Friday. So yes, Happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico. How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, Happy Friday! Then you check your phone quickly and discover today is actually Friday. So yes, Happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico.
Time for lulls. We got one of our favorite guests returning to the program today, none other than Pat Mayo. Excited to catch up with him about all things DFS, how things have been going over in his neck of the woods with content this year, maybe some industry gossip. You guys know the drill. It's lulls with Pete and Brick and guest Pat Mayo.
He thinks this is a go. Vegas Dave thinks this is a go.
Hot naked girls doing yoga.
What?
Why don't you just win like a man?
Random.org. Type in one for yes, two for no, and let the DFS guys pick for you.
And I'm absolutely begging you not to dupe us. Please don't dupe us.
All right, Pat, welcome back to the program. I feel like we maybe did a show during the summer, but it's been a while. How have you been?
I've been doing all right. We're at that part of the season where, you know, the diehards are left, depending on what it is that you're doing. Like, I just remember just transitioning over from fantasy football to daily fantasy to betting and, like, going through each of the progressions. Like, when I started my show, it's been almost 15 years of the PME now, which is insane to think about. Like, it was only fantasy football. We do totals and spreads a little bit, maybe once a week. And then like 2015 started doing daily fantasy with a mix in. And I've just phased out fantasy, like season long fantasy football over time, only doing like two main shows a week about that. But you can see the numbers for those shows just go boop. It's week 12. No one cares.
I know. And Brian, I feel like it's such a counterintuitive thing because you think, all right, makes sense for season long, you know, your record's dog shit, you're not making the playoffs, I'm done. But with DFS, it's like every week's a new week. But we experience that in the DFS world too. And I think there's just either fatigue or people have lost their money and don't want to blast off. I know Davis had been mentioning like the liquidity in the playoff best ball rooms on Underdog versus just like the week 12 battle royale, and that they were filling playoff best ball contests that spoiler alert, don't start for like 2.5 months faster than these week 12 contests, partly because people are like, I'm just sick of losing in these BRs. I'd rather go do the hopeful, you know, playoff best ball thing.
Yeah. Playoff best ball is interesting in its own way too, but it's gotta be losing, which is partly poor play, but also the like sick amounts of variance in DFS and like NFL specifically. And that these guys, you know, easily if they run slightly bad, are just going to get to week 12 and be like, yeah, I'm not going to spend any more money this season. I'll wait till next year or something like that. It's gotta be something like that, or just, and it's probably a combination of things people getting. I'm finding it very hard to set my season long league that I'm like basically out of, you know, but like, I don't want to be that guy. But like, I'm like 3-7 or whatever. And I'm like, I do not care. So I don't know. I kind of could see it being a bunch of different things.
Well, it also goes down to, I don't know how your guys' season long leagues work. Like there was a point in time where I had to get an intern to run my teams for me in like 2014. I was in like 60 leagues or something. Like that was like the big thing to do. That's what you were talking about. You want to be in every industry league possible. I play in one season long fantasy league now. It's like our longtime keeper league with my like 13 friends that we started 15 years ago. Like that's all I got left. And even that, like if I'm out of it, you know, I'll submit my lineup to make sure that I'm following the rules, but like I'm not making moves, I'm not making trades, I don't care. And here's the crazy thing, Pete, I don't know if this happens to you. Like, we don't play for enough money for me to care. This has been a topic of discussion on our show over time. Like, versus what I'm betting each week, playing on underdog each week, and hell, still pumping into DraftKings each week, and then just randomly playing props on a showdown slate, an island game, whatever it might be. Like, it's basically the same as the entire prize pool of our season-long fantasy league. And we have like four of the 14 guys who are like that, and the four of us just don't care anymore.
Yeah, I basically hear two versions of it, right? It's either you have been in this home league for so long and it's so entwined and you care about it just from a bragging rights standpoint so much that that's what compels you to stay competitive, or you just need a shit ton of money on it. Because if you don't have one of those two things and it's like somewhere in the middle, not enough money, not enough like interpersonal camaraderie with your pals, then it just gets, you know, tossed to the wayside. And I'm the same way. Like, my routine, do a ton of drafts on Sunday morning, inactives come, then I build my DraftKings DFS lineups, and then literally with like 5 minutes to spare, oh shit, I have to go set a few season long. Like I always remember with like 4 minutes left. So I don't know, it's tough. How do you push past this kind of, you know, you see the malaise, people are kind of getting bored with the content. Like, as a creator, how do you find the energy to be like, it's another week, guys, let's get up for it?
I get the check still, and I'm like, all right, I better keep doing this.
I would start doing my home league, you know, if I was getting paid to do it.
I actually have a timer set every week, like a reoccurring thing for 17 weeks to remind me at 1:45. I mean, my time, I'm in the Atlantic time zone, which apparently people don't know exists, but I'm an hour ahead of Eastern, so it's 1:45 for me. The game started at 2. It's horrible, but I just have a timer that goes off 15 minutes before lock. You're like, oh yeah, remember to set your lineup. I'm like, oh yeah, it saved me so many times.
Huh. Is that time zone good for any other sports?
No. Okay. If you like soccer, like Premiership, it would be good.
Yeah, I could see that. Or maybe like the European games the NFL does on, you know, one that could be a little easier to handle. Yeah,
they start at 10 a.m. here.
Yeah, that's not too bad.
No, that's actually great. That's why I love the London game so much. Like, when I lived in the Mountain Time Zone, the Mountain Time Zone was the nuts for TV watching. Cause like, we would watch Sunday night football and then like go to the bar afterwards. Cause it'd be like 9:30 PM or something like that. It was awesome. The Sunday night football game ends here at 1, sometimes 12:30 most of the time. Like, I just tape it and watch it in the morning.
Yeah. That's crazy. The home leagues. Do you guys do any of this? I've done 20 years ago, I was like, we got to switch to either like first half season, second half season, right? Or like a toilet bowl, right? Like, that actually has a decent amount of payout, or some sort of reason for people who are out after 7 weeks to keep playing.
So what we did, because we have a bunch of cheapskates in our league, because it's divvied up, because you've been playing this. Now, think about where you and your friends were 15 years ago versus those same friends today. Just kind of all over the spectrum when it comes to life, yet still playing in the same league. So we had a problem because it's a keeper league. If you were like legit not going to win, because people would have these super teams every year, there'd be a battle of 3 or 4 super teams, and you knew the teams that were going to be at the end because they'd trade next year's picks for all the good players this year. People would start rebuilding in week 4. So we instituted a different payout structure that everyone puts in their money at the beginning of the year. And it's actually an escalating scale of what you actually owe at the end. So everyone puts their deposit in for like $100, let's say. And then at the end of the year, the guy who actually finishes last in the regular season owes $500. And the guy who comes second last owes $400. And the guys in the middle don't actually pay anything. They get their $100 back. And it just works like that, that the people at the bottom pay the people at the top. And we found that works way better for people paying attention.
Yeah, you have to have the incentives aligned. Otherwise, it doesn't work. I think the thing that gets me going and why I'm such a big believer in like doing the content that you really enjoy or stuff that you would be doing just on your own, even if there weren't financial incentives, is like, I get jacked up every week for the Battle Royale contest and updating my sheet and looking at the angles and stuff. And so like, that's what drives me. Like, I would literally be doing that stuff even if I wasn't making content around it. So I feel like I have this continued momentum with it. Whereas like, if I was writing a waiver wire column, you know, for Fantasy Life, they know not to ask me to do that. Then I'd be like, man, this feels like a chore right about now, having to do this for week 12 and go through these picks.
It's funny, though, because the thing that I like the most about doing the content is actually doing the content. So it doesn't really matter what the content is. I still get, like, as soon as we, like, I hit record, we're going, I'm talking into the camera, you know, doing the 2 hours of prep before each show and memorizing everything and making sure to, like, figure out the talking points and the rundown. That stuff can get kind of tedious when, listen, I don't write a waiver wire column anymore, but I still kind of need to do waivers on my own side just so I have talking points, be like, hey, this guy's available or that guy's available. Because when I do it, I want to sound like a moron at the same time where I've just completely missed someone, because, you know, the content is really the juice for me when it comes down to this stuff. And I just happen to talk about stuff that I really like. Like, I get so jazzed to do our 3 hour spread show every single week, knowing that, like, half the time is spent talking about football and half the time is spent talking about the world's worst business ideas or something like that. And then we do the best bet show. Like, I'm betting on games. So I get together and do that. I still get fired up for that. So the shows I do get fired up for, it's just thinking about, like, doing rankings every week is so tedious. And then I do them and it's fine. It takes like half an hour or something. I go to run the Sims. I run the projections. It spits me out a list. I'm like, nah, I'd probably play that guy over that guy. And then I'll tell you why.
Yeah. What about you, Brian? Where is your, cause you, I feel like you're doing probably, this has to be the most content you've ever made, right? Through a NFL season previously.
That's what, when Pat was talking, I was like, yeah, actually, I think I enjoy the content more at this point than do it. The best ball is, I was agreeing with you too, Pete, where it's like best ball is just like right now, it's just more interesting. And I'm sure part of that is after a decade of playing DFS, like this is like the first time in my life where I haven't played DFS every day. Not in my life, but since 2015 or whatever, but like every fucking day. So like it becomes, it, you know, it's like, I mean, I don't know. I've thought about it so much. Like what, I don't know. It's like, it's not as interesting. I could totally see if somebody who's just getting into it now, though, would be like, oh, wow, let me think about this. And oh, salary cap to best. You know, I bet they have the same things that we kind of talk about with basketball, but and gambling too. So like if I didn't gamble so much since I was who knows what age, I'd probably also be way more interested in my season long team and in even basketball. But I think it's the newness of it that's cool. But I mean, we can't really complain though. I mean, this is not real work, any of it. You know, you could have much less enjoyable jobs for sure. If you guys noticed the, this is, I'm not sure if this is true, Pat, you'll probably know, the ratings for NBA are down a lot, and NFL even I heard is ticked down this year. Do you know if any of that's true?
I haven't looked into it. Basketball doesn't surprise me. Like the most ridiculous media deal I've ever seen is that new NBA deal. Like the ratings never match up to the actual interest. And I wrote down one thing for us to talk about, is that ad buyers might not know shit about anything, so you can kind of like rook some companies into money if you want to. If people are looking to make extra money, like with, you know, something like Athletic Greens, for example, who sponsor my show, they know like the market exactly. Here's what we're going to pay per view for your demographic, for like, they have it all worked out. This is their entire business. But other companies might, you know, not know some of this stuff, and you can kind of take them, especially if the product sucks. And, you know, you'll take the money, you pass it off, no one ends up buying it anyway, and you're good to go. And I think this kind of happens the same thing in media right now, where they're paying, because live sports, people watch live sports. And yes, the percentage of the audience that watches live sports versus, you know, CBS programming on a Thursday night now, scripted shows, even reality TV, it's so much higher. But I don't think that they're the right types of people that you want at this point. Like, I don't know. It feels like a lot of money. Like when I hear these absurd deals, and maybe it is worth it, but do you guys know anyone that like sits down and watches the NBA all the time that isn't betting on it?
That isn't betting on it.
That isn't betting on it. You take that out of the equation. I don't think I know anyone.
Football, yes, people watch. Basketball, like, I'm sure there's basketball diehards out there, but it really seems to be like a social media sport.
Yeah, I mean, I think the one, you know, carve out would be, you know, I have friends back home that are still Nuggets fans that don't play fantasy, and they'll watch the Nuggets. And, you know, if it's an above average team, you know, there's still some draw there, although you can't even watch the Nuggets at Denver with their media blackout rules. But I think outside of just like Homer, you know, fans, I don't know who else is just an NBA generalist, you know, vacuuming up all this content without any action on it.
It's more like something to do, to go to. for, I feel like, for a lot of people than like it was back in the day in the 90s and stuff. Like, oh, game's on, you know, everyone's going to watch it, right? Like, people go to the games, but I don't know. It does feel like the viewing is, maybe not. It's hard because, like, I'll play Madden, and then like, you know, you'll hear the guy talking, you know, through his headset or whatever, through the TV. And it's like, oh, this guy is exactly like the type of person from the 90s and 2000s. You know, the things they say. It's like, maybe the world hasn't changed at all. You know, so maybe those guys are still, you know, sitting down watching every single game in their hometown or something. But I feel like the young people are not tuned in. And it's really like late millennial Gen X is kind of like the tipping point. And like, if boomers, you know, I mean, if the older boomers get, the less of them there's going to be around here. I bet that impacts that viewing number big time.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, they'll find new ways, as I was kind of saying, like about how ad buyers don't know shit. Like, I'm sure that the NBA cooks up some numbers being like, well, our engagement on TikTok in China says this, therefore that's worth X amount of money, when like, who knows how much that's actually worth. Like, it's a lot like speculating on crypto in a way, where like, yeah, maybe this monetization of this platform actually is way undervalued and they don't even realize that. But it feels like, depending on the product that you have that you're offering the ad space on and which you want to work in conjunction with them, that, you know, it's a lot of speculation in that front. And people see the NBA as young. People see the NBA as worldwide. That's great and everything, but young people don't have money. They're not actually tuning into the games. And it feels like they watch 5 seconds of a TikTok rather than watching a game. I don't know how much money these people are spending.
Yeah. I don't think they have a lot of money either. Unfortunately, the ad buying is interesting, like, because we get offers through like the podcasting networks, you know, like they have like all these shitty offers, and like, we want Pete to read, you know, 18 messages for 25 cents. And it's like, yeah. So like, I don't know how stupid, like what you mean by stupid, like that, because that's pretty stupid. But like, if they got us to do it, it wouldn't be the end of the world.
Well, it all depends on what they pay, too. Like, I had someone reach out to me yesterday. They're like, I don't even know what the product was. It was some like gym gear or something like that. They're like, yeah, like, you can put the affiliate link and we'll pay you a commission off your affiliate link. It's like, yeah, it does not work that way. That's not the game that I'm playing over here. Like, you come up with your cash and you tell me how much you're going to pay me. And then we can talk about where that gets inserted in, how long that's going to run for. But I know there's a lot of people, especially on these different social media platforms. Like, I think that we have a big advantage here, like between my show, your guys' show, Pete, your network, that, you know, you have loyal viewers, and that's really important, like the ad buying space and keeping the monetization of this stuff going, because, you know, there's people with much larger followings than me, especially like on social, but they don't actually have the audience that you or I have, which is very interesting to think about when it comes to actually making a career out of this.
That makes me think. I was listening to a random podcast feed. They interview like gaming startup founders, and they had Cal Spears and Bales on talking about Gambly. And Cal Spears mentioned something that I thought was really interesting, that one of the things they're kind of banking on with their business model, and they don't have any like monetization stuff turned on or advertising right now, is that the affiliate game for like sports books and sites like Underdog and Prize Picks, that they will eventually come to value like entries over first-time depositors, and that there could be a referral business or affiliate business set up around that. Basically, like, how many people are tailing your specific bet, which I think is a really interesting thing, because we experience that like with ship chasing. We have a partnership with Underdog where we do our ship cast on Thursday nights. We got one tonight, and we have our entries, and like, we're not converting any first-time depositors. Everyone who's in our audience is already on Underdog, but we have a ton of people who tail our entries. And right now, I mean, we have a good deal with Underdog and we feel like we're compensated for it, but like, it does seem like that is an untapped thing to this whole kind of ecosystem of like, are you actually getting people to wager on the site?
I completely agree with you. Like, when I met with my Underdog reps, I've met with them a few times, like in person, going on some like excursions and events and things like that. And that was the big thing that I pitched them. I was like, hey, year one, like, I get it. You want the first time depositors. You want me to convert my audience over and talk about Underdog and get that money onto the site. I completely understand that. We'll put it in benchmarks. But going forward, like, you can't expect me to have as many first time depositors year two as I did year one. That doesn't make any sense whatsoever. You want me to bring my people in and have them be active players on your app. I'm going to be an active player, and I want my audience to be active players too, because, you know, hopefully we're winning. But either way, let's say everyone can just break even. That would be great. That's, I mean, when I left DraftKings, that was my whole pitch to them. I was like, look, I have this ecosystem on your app. I fill up a 5,000 person tournament for golf and for NFL every single week of the year. Just think about the rake that you make, and that's a rake free contest. So assuming all those other people play $100 worth of entries, I'm pretty sure it was way more than that, that the rake off that alone would be more than, you know, like, that's how I was trying to base my salary off of. It was like, yeah, give me a fourth of that and like call it even. I'm doing content for you. And you're just basically, it's free content, free marketing, and this one contest that I can guide people to. So that's what I wanted to do with that Pick'em League. That's the reason that that exists right now, Pete, is that I can have this NFL Pick'em League, which is really fun to go into, but it tracks the people and the usernames that came in through me that are playing in my NFL contest that I can point to and be like, look, like, these are the people that are playing, like, because of me. I mean, whether that's true or not, I mean, some people would play it anyway. Maybe some people thought it was a great way to get in on a 5K first prize. I'm sure there's a mix of everything, but when you can fill up like 3,000 people into one of these things and they can track the usernames and how much money they're playing and how active they're going to be, that's the better way to judge it, at least in my mind, if I was running the business.
Yeah.
I understand how important first-time players are, but how many first-time players sign up, play $10 and never play again? Like, the vast majority?
Yeah. And to me, it sounds like it's only like a tech hurdle, right? As far as being able to track that in a really smart way. It seems like that the back-end stuff just isn't quite sophisticated for some of these sites right now to be able to really track and then kind of value that. Do you have thoughts on that, Brian?
Yeah. Do you know, I mean, the thing I've just, you know, where my head goes, like, it's just so frustrating that, like, because I know, like, the inside baseball in Illinois, at least anyways, of getting these sports books legalized, and everything was bent on those initial users, right? Was getting those, like, that was the argument, was BetRivers wasn't going to get DraftKings was going to kill them on the initial users. They needed 2 years before DraftKings can enter the market, and then they got to buy these casinos, right? So all this, you know, years of negotiating and politics and maneuvering, and then now they're like, hey, actually it doesn't matter that much, let's just do something, you know, let's just do these guys who do pick'ems, let's just sign Pete and Pat. And it's like, you guys fucked with our lives for years, and they're just gonna pivot on a dime and don't give a fuck.
But it makes sense now too, though. Like, there's only so many first-time customers that you can have. I don't want to say that everyone who signed up for one of these things has signed up for it. I'm sure they're like, I see the trickles in every single week. Like, at the beginning of NFL season, there was a bunch of people the week before, the week of, and even into week two. Like, I mean, outside of the Masters and when I first joined, those were the three biggest weeks that I had all year and getting people to sign up. And every week it's about the same from here on out. I'm sure at Thanksgiving, it'll probably go up a little bit, maybe at Christmas time for the Christmas Day games. When golf starts again, I'm sure more people will sign up. And the NFL works much better for Pick'em. Basketball and football, I feel like, are really the two really good Pick'em sports, especially on Underdog, that they're just fun to play all the time. Like, I legit love playing Pick'em on Underdog. Like, it's so much fun for me because it's like what I would be looking at anyway. And I mean, it doesn't hurt that I had like four fire weeks before last week when I lost a bunch of money, but I got to withdraw like five times. That never happens, like, over the course of 3 weeks. So like, that part is fun. But when we get to golf season, I like that they have the golf best ball on the go now. We're going to have major season on the go, and maybe I'll run the Pick'em League for PGA best ball as well. But what I'm really trying to, like, hammer them down to be like, look, PGA round by round Pick'em is fun. And I get that's probably where they make their most money off of it, because it's just, but it's incredibly hard and there's not enough information. Like, you think variance in some sports are bad? Think about, like, I mean, you play Showdown for PGA, don't you, Brick? Like, think about the variance on like one round of a golfer.
Yeah. Oh, it's crazy.
But instead of doing, like, they have the battle royale drafts, but they're for each round, like a showdown contest.
Yeah.
I would be all in on, hey, let's draft 10 guys to my team Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday, and we get the full tournament. So make it like that.
Yeah.
There's two things I want Underdog to do. I'm sure they've thought of these, but the pick six in DraftKings, like, they screwed it up. They kept changing it, and every change makes it worse. And like, the rake's like 40% or something now. I love pick. This is Pick'ems, but you're playing against other people, right? And so it's more like DFS Pick'em style. That'd be awesome if they would add that. And to kind of like, you know, button up what we were talking about in the beginning, home leagues, I would love best ball season long on Underdog. And then just, then I don't have to worry about it. Right. Then I don't have to worry about doing my waiver wires when I'm 3-7 and, you know, going in the week 11 or whatever. But I haven't seen, I don't know, maybe I'm wrong, but I haven't seen that on Underdog or any of these sites. There's no best ball home leagues.
Yeah. You know, you can create a private league and do a draft, but it would be nice if they just had a few customization options on it. Like say you're with your buddies and you're doing it and you want to change the pick clock to a minute and a half because you're doing it live and you want everybody to be, you know, like some stuff like there's that to customize too. It would
like
be cool.
PPR yeah. and stuff like, cause everyone's got their little idiosyncrasies in their home. Yeah. Stuff like that would be nice. Yeah.
Well, that's why, like, you know, still so many legacy leagues are on my fantasy league because they just have this insane customization suite. You know, the interface is awful. They haven't evolved past like the mid 90s aesthetic. And yet they still offer this high powered functionality that you can't get in ESPN and Yahoo League. So they retain a lot of their user base.
Yeah. I find Yahoo's pretty good for that. Like we've been on Yahoo for 20 years. I find it is like, but it's also one of those things you're so familiar with it that you know how to use it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm on Yahoo too. CBS was good back in the day, but then they like started charging, I think, and then so we left.
Imagine charging anything for season-long fantasy football at this point. Like, unless you're the fantasy footballers, like I don't imagine who could do that. Maybe you guys do it Fantasy Life. I'm not sure, Pete, but like we used to do that at Roto Experts when that was a thing in like 2011. Like, oh, here's our season-long package, $39.99 a month. I was like, who would ever buy this? People would buy it, mind you. I was like, I couldn't imagine spending money on this.
Yeah. No, I mean like the MFL stuff, I commission a dynasty league there and I pay $49 a year or whatever, just because I'm like, I don't have to go, you know, bully some other site and have all these workarounds. I can just keep rolling it over. You just take it out of the prize pool and it just, you know, whatever, we just keep doing it.
Is your home leagues? I'm just interested really quickly. Yeah. My home league buy-in, I think it's the exact same since 20 years. No one.
Yeah. No inflation.
We doubled ours at one point a few years ago.
Okay.
Yeah. That is I think, a smart thing if you can keep raising the stake. The thing is, it's just so hard to get 11 people in a league to agree on.
Yeah.
Right? Some people want to play bigger. Some want to go less. Like if they suck and they're the more casual one, they don't want to ratchet it up. The guy who's won 3 times in a row is like, let's play bigger. Like if anyone's ever tried to get a consensus on a rule change in a home league, it is just the most miserable thing on earth.
The only thing that we have consensus in our league, like, listen, if people want to play for more money, at least there's now other avenues where you can do that. So you can take your action elsewhere and still play at it and like have a good, I never feel bad about being in the league. Sometimes I feel bad about the effort that I put into it. You know, I'm in first place this year. So, you know, I am putting in some decent effort and trying to make sure that everything's going on. When I'm in last, you know, it's like Brian said, you don't really care anymore. But we do have the consensus agreement that the draft is the Wednesday, the day before the first game every year. That's when we do it. So people can schedule that out a year in advance.
That's smart. Smart.
Yeah.
So what has, because Pat, with your deal with Underdog, obviously a pretty big shift as far as content. You were doing a lot of DraftKings salary cap stuff. A lot of your audience had, you know, come to expect that from you. What has that transition been like? You know, the platform being, you know, a pretty big, you know, change as far as what they expected.
Well, I mean, I worked it out with Underdog that I could still do my weekly DraftKings show. So I do that with Tambo every week. Actually, I have Davis on tomorrow because Tambo is away. So I still do that NFL on Fridays. We just break down the entire DraftKings slate, go through everything, and I'll give some of my Underdog picks in it. And I do the same thing during golf season on Wednesdays as well. Because it was my contention that, like, look, people come to me for this one thing. You don't want to completely shift it on everyone. Then they're just going to tune out. Like I can convert those people into Underdog players if they're not already Underdog players. Like it's not like people think that I'm sponsored by DraftKings anymore. I'm actively shilling Underdog all the time, giving out pick 'em plays, doing drafts within that course of the show as well. So it hasn't been as big of a change for me as it, but I just like don't play on DraftKings anymore. Like my handle is probably like 1/10 what it was a year ago.
Yeah. Yeah. That's pretty significant. People always keep asking me because I still do, you know, the DraftKings review on Mondays. I do the show with JM, but everything should point to me just doing exclusively underdog, because I'm also playing much better over there. But similar to you, like, I still enjoy the puzzle of the salary cap stuff, and a big chunk of the audience still really, really likes salary cap DFS. But I'm the same with you. I spend less time on it. Thankfully, at least when you're like, you know, dissecting a slate, what are the plays you like, the game environments you like, that's still macro and universal. But the games like couldn't be more different based on the strategies and the things you're trying to do.
And where you tend to focus on the draft aspect of underdog, I am almost 100% on the pick'em side of it and focusing on that. But I do feel like any discussion, be it in betting, season-long fantasy, or even salary cap DFS, I think that I can make the 1v1 over to which pick'em plays that I like really easily out of that discussion.
For sure.
So we, Pete, unless Pete has a...
No, go for it. For
the... we've talked offline, Pat, a decent amount, and you've had some ideas on like where DFS is going kind of as a whole in industry. I think you mentioned Texas is kind of an idea too there that could help. If they get what legalized, are they, I didn't even know. Are they, is it illegal there or what? So like,
sports betting still illegal in Texas, but it looks like that could be the next one to go, but probably in like 2 years.
They got to do the bullshit, you know, over and over again in every state, and then not care about the thing they cared so deeply about 2 years later. So like, what's your feeling overall on DFS? What does it look like 2 years from now?
I mean, are we talking about salary cap DFS or all
salary cap DFS? Yeah.
Salary cap DFS. I don't think that this is necessarily, you know, the high point, obviously, for salary cap DFS, but I think that those that are still playing it are going to continue to play. You probably see fewer people join it, but I do think that the ecosystem is pretty good and very sustainable because people like the product. People are used to the product. I was talking to my wife the other day about, we were watching The Real Housewives of Beverly Hills season premiere, two-parter. Good two episodes. Jennifer Tilly's on it now. Who knew? Do you know her, Brian?
The yeah, of course. Yeah. Chucky, Bride of Chucky, poker player.
Poker with Jennifer Tilly. There's a video of her on the channel of the man's playing poker with Jennifer Tilly. She's a legend.
So yeah, so she's on Bravo now. And there was someone in the show who's an actress. I think she's like 49 or something like that. She's like, you know, when I was coming up, they told us that, you know, once a woman got to her 40s, she couldn't be an actress anymore. They would just find someone new. And that probably was true at that point. And I was talking to my wife about it. And I was like, the problem is that there's no collective memory of anyone. If you're under the age of basically 35 right now, everything is so fragmented that what you liked 15 years ago, you just actually gravitate back towards. I was watching the Frasier reboot the other day on Paramount Plus. Like, yeah, I like Frasier. I remember Frasier. And I think that salary cap DFS being the first on the scene is always going to have that inherent advantage amongst the grouping that you had already said, Brian, that like 35 to 50 right now. Like if you're between 35 and 50 right now, and you've been playing on DraftKings and FanDuel for ages, you're probably just going to keep playing on there as long as you still enjoy it.
That's fair. Yeah. Maybe with some small modification changes, but that's still kind of the general way to play the game. Something new. I mean, if you think about it, best ball really is not new, right? Of course, like we've been doing best ball forever, right? It just in our home leagues and stuff. So I guess that's fair. I'm kind of like dovetailing on the idea of sports in general not being as popular though. Do you think that's going to impact DFS and sports betting / best ball?
I don't know, because from what, I mean, I don't have a great sense of what the Utes of the world are doing at the moment, but I actually always try to have either an intern or someone that I work with that's between like 20 and 25, and like it's one person's experience, so it's not necessarily universal by any means, but you can just see some of the habits of them, like ask them how their friends are doing, because you know, they work within sports, so you think I mean, Joe Holka figured it out, man. Just like, here are five picks that will win you $5,000 today in less than 20 seconds. Here they are. Boom, 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 loser. And just every single week, I need the four picks. They're going to win me $5,000. That's how they play.
I mean, yeah, reading that the Walking Bets girls comments on Twitter. Yeah, I believe there are I didn't think there was this many people on the planet, but there's an overwhelming amount of bros who will just fucking do any, you know, all the dumbest shit on the planet.
Yeah, though that kind of dovetails with two. Well, Brian and I talked about this a couple weeks back, and then we were just talking about like the affiliate stuff with tailing entries. Like, what kind of conversions do you think Taylor was doing? Like, how many people do you think she's getting to actually make those bets?
I don't know. It's either way higher than I think or hilariously lower than I think.
Yeah. Well, but like, what about compared to Hulka or somebody like, you know, we don't got to talk about Hulka, but just someone like that.
Hulka has found like the skeleton key to all of this. Like, it's really impressive what he's done. I mean, Sal was the same way. Sal got on this early. Like, everyone who paired up with like trying to figure out how to like tailor the algorithm to see your stuff is doing great. Like, absolute gangbusters. Like, I tried it like once or twice for a week. It's just... you want to talk about something like you can't do because your heart isn't in it. I just couldn't do social media that way, Pete. I would have had to hire someone to do it for me.
Both you and I have the skill set. We have the editing process. We can drop the picks. Like, we could do that, but I have zero interest. It doesn't sound like a fun time. I would burn out on it so quickly, even watching the first time depositors just roll in. Like, it just isn't worth it.
Huh. And that's kind of where I landed on it as well. But when you can target that either on Instagram or on TikTok, like, you're just reaching an audience that I don't reach with any of my stuff. Like, I do long form, half serious, half joking shows 6 days a week that range from 60 minutes to 3.5 hours. Like, there's almost not enough time in the week for everyone to be able to consume my product. And like, when I look at the age ranges for my show, like, no one really younger than 25, hell, even younger than 30, really watches my stuff anymore. So you get into that sort of vortex and that sort of bubble where you don't really understand how to reach that next generation down. And I don't know, like, is it through TikTok? Like, are 20-year-olds tuning into half comedy, fantasy sports / betting / pick'em podcasts? I would venture a guess to say no, because I mean, do you see any, like, because I started my show, Brian, when I was 23, and like, I went back to watch some the other day. It's like, yeah, it's not like that much different than what my show looks like now. I'm far more polished. You know, the editing is better, the production value is better, but the nuts and bolts are still the same show in a lot of ways. Like, are there a lot of 21-year-olds doing long form podcasting or videos right now, or is it all the short content stuff?
Yeah, that's a good. I definitely do not listen to any young person's long form podcast. I'll tell you that much. I listen to a lot of long form podcasts. Everyone is at least, well, I guess there's a few. There's a few probably in their late 20s, early 30s.
Yeah, that's not young. Like, Davis is like 31 or something.
32, yeah.
Like, I wouldn't consider Davis a young person.
No. No. Yeah, I'm talking 23 or 24 or whatever. I don't think I listen to any of them. Yeah.
And I'm sure they exist.
And I think it is, it's almost like it is selling like two different experiences, right? Like, for us, what's fun is the water cooler aspect of all of this, whether it's talking strategy, talking storylines, narratives, tangents, like just living in this world and having fun with it. That lends itself to long form style content. You think about, you know, a 20 something right now who might stumble across a TikTok and be down to bet. They are just adding that to their short attention span dopamine stack. Let me throw the little pick 'em in tonight. I'll scroll down, see if I won or not. I'll move on to the next thing. You know, like, that's like how I think they're experiencing it. Like, they're like, I don't want to live in this world, like, in the way our headspace is in this world nonstop. They're like, just give me the little slot machine, you know, and I'll move on to the next day.
And the big thing is too, like, I'm sure there's a ton of like, I keep saying underdog, but like, when I like underdog or however, like the forced parlay pick'ems, which, you know, I enjoy, they're fun, but they're like same game parlay. So when like, I see Austin's in the chat and you're and people are talking about like, yeah, what do young people do? Like, they're betting on sports. A, that depends on where you live, for one thing. Not everyone can do it everywhere. And when they say that people are betting on sports, I almost guarantee you, it's not like, man, I love Tampa Bay -5.5, -108 tonight. No, they like five guys on the same game parlay.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I mean, I'm trying to like, there is the aspect that Pete just mentioned that we always say, like, sometimes I want to sweat. I don't want to think about it. What do you got, Pete? All right. What do you got, Pat? I'll put it in. I don't give a shit. You know, I'm just watching the game at the bar, but I do think there is a larger portion that I realized before of just stone cold morons out there. You know what I mean? Like that are just signing up and gambling and just making shitty pick after shitty pick. Like the Walking Bets girl. Like, I mean, come on. Like it's almost like a psyop or something, right? Like they're just you make one of these best bets, you get on a list. You know what I mean? Like, no. So 2023, you did a 3-game parlay from the Walking Bets girls. Is this true, Pat? Did you? Yes, Your Honor. Right. Like it's going to be used against you somehow. None of it makes any sense.
It's a great marketing ploy, if nothing else.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, I mean,
and listen, I would do it too. Like if I always worry about that. Like if my job goes away, if like literally everyone tunes out tomorrow and I'm just cooked, I'm done for. I can't do this anymore for a living. Like I legit don't know what I would do. I'd probably turn to like getting fake boobs and doing that.
I don't know. That's a pretty form-fitting shirt right there, Pat. I mean, I feel like you walking around there, the pecs popping out there, you could make some.
Well, I had a friend who hosts a challenge podcast and he messaged me the other day. He's like, what's your ratio in terms of male to female viewers? I'm like, it's like 95-5. And I was like, then I probably have one of the largest female audiences in the space because of that. And he's like, yeah, he's like, most challenge podcasts are like 80% women and 20% dudes. And ours is like the exact opposite. I was like, yeah, because you're three dudes talking about a reality show. Like, men generally tune in to hear men talk on things, especially about sports or whatever it is. If there's no woman there, I don't think like females are going to tune into your product all that much. But men might tune into short videos, conversely, the other way.
Well, and that goes back to this whole thing of like, what are people signing up for when they listen or consume any kind of content? They want to relate to the host. They want to feel like they're hanging out with their friends. And I think it naturally self-selects that guys are going to want to hang out with other guys, girls, or whatever. Like that division doesn't shock me. Obviously, if your product is really good and your information, like that shit doesn't matter. But just as far as what people are going to gravitate to, like, yeah, I think that checks out.
And what do people gravitate towards? Like if you're like, I guess you can get the quick dopamine hit. Like here are the picks in under 20 seconds. Boom. I can go put this in. That's easy. I really find that the middle ground is very tough. Like if you're going to do 20-40 minutes on a topic, I really feel like you need to be an expert and be really good. Like I've never made any bones that I'm awesome at doing this. I think someone in the chat actually asked a little bit earlier. It's like, do people ever accuse you of like throwing your picks? Like I would like to say that I'm actively throwing my picks and helping out underdog. And that's why I'm losing at things. That's not really what's going on. I'm genuinely trying to win here, but it's just very hard to win when you're doing it. So if you are an expert in something, like 20 minutes is perfect because people will tune into you to get like real actionable winning advice. But so few people win that it's hard to pull that off at such a high rate where it would be worth it. Like we're running this picks pool on Underdog right now, so I can see everyone who's made over 180 picks. Everyone can when you check out the leaderboard, like that the highest player, because 180 picks is what you need to qualify for the season long prize. The winner right now is at 57.1%. Like that's tough, man. And that's a good year. That's the best anyone's doing.
Well, and that's what makes the marketing around this kind of content so problematic, right? Like the whole reason I don't get accused of that is because I never say the gold star locks. Like I think I'm a profitable BR drafter. I think I'm profitable in those draft games. I am just a break-even pick'em player who plays to have fun, and I love building the entries. I love taking shots on like the sliders and just seeing if I can bank something big. I never say I have the skeleton keys to the pick'em slate on Underdog. Like I don't say that because I don't. And so I think that's where people don't accuse you of that. But it is hard because that is how you sell the audience. That's how you get rolling in the algorithm. You see the posts, you know, from the Alex Caruso's. I got the gold star lock under 18 rebounds tonight or whatever. And it's like, that's hard because they are saying that it's like nearly financial advice what they're pitching.
I say I couldn't do that.
Yeah.
It's got, I mean, if you like, I do think like Odd Shopper for Stochastic. I imagine if you use that properly, you'll probably make some money. And there's other tools out there. Like I know a lot of like ETR prop picks are profitable, stuff like that. Some of the smaller markets, but that's not super sexy. Like to do that kind of content.
Oh, absolutely. Like the Run the Sims prop sniper is excellent. It's having a good year. Like, I'm winning money betting solo props on that, but it's like, I need to put 200 on this one. That's minus 130. Hey, I need to take a shot on this one that we have as a 48% chance winner, but it's playing plus 160 tonight. Like, that's a good bet based on the percentages, but it still loses more than half the time. And I do find that people just don't have the attention span. Like, I think about my friends who, like, were about 40, and a lot of them have money to throw out there. Like, the amount of money I was able to get down on the Jake Paul fight with some of my friends was hilarious, just because they wanted to bet on Mike Tyson, and they got deep pocketbooks. Now they had to send me a bunch of transfers, which is just excellent news. But it is a situation where, like, it's like, I use that to actually pay for the Mayo Media Party, which they're all invited to, which is open bar and free food. So technically they paid for the party this year, which is nice. And I bought a new computer out of it. But... like, they'll want to play once, and they'll bet aside, and they'll win, and then the next bet they make because they won that one is just a parlay of two bets, because they can't lose. Like, there's no, if you want to win at anything, like, be it sports betting, be it prop betting, no matter what it is, and DFS is probably the same way. It's like, no one, everyone talks about bankroll management, but what would you say, Brick? 2% of people actually practice it.
Not many. Not a lot of good players too, unfortunately.
Yeah, like, like, especially like when you're running hot. Like, I lost more than I should on Underdog last week because I was fucking fire for 4 weeks in a row. It's like, I can't lose. Like, I figured it out. I'm gonna ride this, and I'm gonna press until it goes sideways. Now I'm like afraid to make any sort of entries. I'm like, oh no, I got everything wrong last week, and like, that tilt goes both ways.
For sure.
Yeah. Like, Pete, I'm not saying that I'm immune to it. I'm not. Like, I don't have the best bankroll practices either. But I think that, like, when you're starting small and just people are telling you, like, oh, I have the picks, you can follow me. Well, that might last like one day and you're done.
Yeah.
Pete, you're running hot. You're like, let's say your average unit size on a Sunday is, you know, X. Well, how many are you right around there still? Are you double that right now? You triple
that?
No,
that's the, you mean like in Pick'em?
How much are you betting? Oh. How much extra are you betting since you're running hot, or are you not at all?
No, for sure. Like, the, you know, like, if I make a normal pick'em entry, I'm normally doing a $25 or $50 unit, depending if it's like a three leg or a five leg. And then, like, after a few of those winning weeks, like, I'm sliding into Monday's pick'ems, $100 unit. Like, just literally, again, not because I have an extra edge, not because I have an extra angle. It's just like, oh, there's a little extra money in the account. Let's just, you know, it's like when you're at the blackjack table, right? And the deck's hot. And it's like, what are you doing? I'm ratcheting up my unit size because we're hitting here.
Yeah, we got to run it out with the good times. The one, like, the only good bankroll practice that I have and have used for like 10 years now, and it's made me weirdly profitable with all these places, is I just have a number in my account that I keep at all times. Like, I'll let it play to zero, then reinvest for that. But once I go over it, I just take out that much and just put it in an account. And it's the gambling account that if I have to redeposit, that's where the money comes from. That I just, because I did the same thing that Pete did, like Pete is talking about, like the first time I won big on DraftKings, I won 20 grand on my birthday in like 2015 in a golf contest, like off a $5 entry. I was like, well, I'm going to play $2,000 next week. I can't lose. I lost every single cent. Yeah. And like, that terrified me, and to be like, I need to get this fucking money out of here right now, or it's all going away.
This conversation makes me think about like how like things have changed so much. Like when Pat talked about getting boobs, right, to do promos. Do you remember that guy back in the day who lost a golf bet? I'm sure you guys remember this. It was popular probably in like the late 90s, early 2000s. Just some guy lost a golf bet and had to get breast implants for a year. And then he had so much fun and intention, he just kept them. It was a huge news story. I can't believe you guys can't. Maybe this is how old I am. Taking notes,
because he was already thinking about the walking bets career path there. And so there you go.
I don't know. No one knew his name, but yeah, that was a big news story. It's funny, and like I don't think anyone would even give a shit, you know, like nowadays. Or if anything, they would be like, you're insensitive. Like, what are you doing? And like, you know, back in the day, who like Vegas Dave was like the guy, you know, who's like sell out, you know, picks you didn't want. Now you can go on Twitter and it's just fucking lists of people trying to show their picks.
But how oversaturated is that market? Because you still see people popping up doing it. So there must be money there.
Yeah. I think it's, you know, I was listening to Davis and Andrew Wiggins talk on his take cast, but like this concept of the online casino, right? And the same people, whether you're on the Robinhood app taking shots at stocks, whether you're in the meme coin casino, it was NFTs, 10 leg parlays, DFS, like there's still this idea of chipping a chair. You know, this is how I get out of this town. I get lucky once. I bank it. I just think that that chase of that is just so omnipresent right now for so many people.
Now, do you think that is a sentiment that is, because you could think about it in different ways. Like, is that a socioeconomic reality of our time? Because there's now people, I don't even know if people are poorer today than they were 10 years ago or 20 years ago. It just feels like if you have a bunch of people talking about how little they make, it feels like there's more. And then you have other people who are online just bragging about how much money they have when they probably don't even have that much money all the time, that it feels like there's this big chasm. So is that pushing people to try to take these huge investment shots, be like, hey, if I lose all my money, well, I had no money anyway. So what really, what's the difference to me? I'm just starting all over again when I barely had more than anything before. Or is the access of all this stuff where before you had to buy a Powerball ticket or play a scratch ticket or literally go to Vegas and pull a slot, now you can just do it from your phone. So more people are doing it. That sentiment was always there among people. They just had no way to access it. Now they do.
You could probably compare England to America and look at the rates since they had access, so much more access to these things.
But this is all new too, though, right? Like at least in England, this stuff has been ingrained. Like I was in London last summer. There's like a bookie on every corner. Mm-hmm. You know, like it's just a part of the culture. And I'd be curious to know like what the problem gambling rates are in England versus what they're going to be in the US when you're just
don't get Brian started on problem gambling rates. We only got about 10 more minutes left.
They're about the same everywhere.
Are they? Yeah, I mean that makes sense. But I bet you they were a lot lower here or lower in America because just people didn't have access to it. And now they do.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll find out. I mean, my guess is it'll probably be about the same. I definitely think the socioeconomic thing you mentioned is definitely part of it. Like you know, the amount of inflation over those 4 years, you know, you lost like half your wealth essentially. Everyone, like, there's just no, because everything you buy in the future costs, you know, whatever, 1.75 times what it did before that. So certainly, and like the easy. There's, you know, some easy money to kind of over the years, sometimes that could be handed out, you know, and people tend to gamble that a little bit more. I think that's definitely part. Both of them are part of it. I mean, you can't deny that the ease of access of betting is going to make more people. I mean, I'm not even sure if betting should have ever been legalized, honestly.
I am, as someone whose entire lifestyle is propped up by this, I think it should be legal everywhere. And you know what? I think we should give people money to gamble. That's what I think. That's my campaign platform.
Yeah. I mean, I think people should be able to do whatever they want, as long as it doesn't hurt anyone else, for sure. But
this has, like, the ability to hurt other people. But like, would you say that smoking would be the same thing?
Smoking. I mean, is assuming smoking didn't hurt anyone else too. Yeah. No, what I was going to say is I think they should, you know, people should be able to do it. I'm just saying, I don't know if on net it actually is going to be beneficial.
Well, think about it this way. Like, we legalized weed nationwide, I guess when Trudeau got elected, whatever the hell that was, like 2015 or something, like 10 years ago. And I think that the actual, like, because they were doing studies because it was decriminalized for such a long time, I actually think that rates went down on people smoking weed in Canada at the moment it became legalized.
Yeah, they I think Portugal with actual hard drugs legalized there had some similar results. But like, it's hard to do studies like that, because like in Portugal, they also ramped up police efforts to kick people off the streets from doing drugs, like really hardcore. So, you know, if you go after like that cohort of people, maybe that could lower the rates, you know, if like, you're just like, you just can't stay here anymore. You can't just, you know, you can't have your tents and shanties and go ahead.
Yeah. And that's always going to be the thing with studies like that, is A, that the sample size is never really going to be long enough to that you can see a generational impact on the culture. And then you have these external factors, like you're saying, policing efforts, or even if it's like, I know that, like, in, I assume that San Francisco is probably the same way, a big West Coast thing, but in Vancouver, like, they have the open needle sites where, like, they're not really policing people doing heroin, but they have people there to make sure that people don't kill themselves at the same time. Like the needle drops, the clean needles, like that's what they're trying there. I know they try that in other countries, but if you just said, hey, heroin's legal, like, would the rate go down because everyone would just OD at some point if you didn't try to take care of them?
Right. Yeah. I mean,
like there's so many different things that can put pressure on how the results actually go and how to skew them that way. And even like when you ask people certain questions, I mean, you worked in polling, you know, that that's the whole point of the poll. Can I ask this in the way that I get the answer that I want kind of thing?
Sure. For sure. Yeah. And well, a lot of these ballot measures too, are just like to get people in to vote and they aren't even binding legally. You know, sometimes you'll see like, do you want minimum wage to be $17 or $20? Like, oh yeah, yeah, yes, I do. It's like, oh, it was actually not a binding thing, even though it was on your voting. It was just to get people in to vote, like from a certain demographic. They do tons of stuff like that. This is kind of we're kind of meandering all over here, but I want to just, there's like this like homeless alley, kind of alleyway on Foster in Chicago. And I was like just driving by there the other day and thinking like, this is like insane. This guy lives in the bus stop. You know how you'll just have like a little covering for people to wait for the bus. He just made that his house, you know, for the last year. And I was thinking,
same setup. Yeah.
If I park in front of his bus stop, they will ticket me and tow my car. But if I made it my home, I could stay there for a year. Like none of this makes any fucking sense. So like these people trying to figure out whether gambling is a net positive or negative for society and stuff, I have absolutely no faith in anyways. So like, fuck them. But I don't know.
To circle this back to fantasy sports just for a second, I did want to say that the one and done, the race for the Mayo Cup has returned. FantasyGolfChampionships.com. We'll do the promo, but I got $1 million guaranteed in the prize pot this year. $1 million bucks, Rick.
Oh, that's right. You've told me that. Yeah. Wow.
So I need people to play in it.
Okay. So where can they find it?
FantasyGolfChampionships.com. It starts in January. It's $250 per entry this year, but it goes from January to August. It works out to be like $7 a week. You can have up to 5 entries and it's $100K guaranteed to first. I mean, if you are a fan of flat payouts, this is the contest you'll want to be in. I think it's like 100K, 70K, 65K, 50K. Like it's in the top like 650 end up paying at a 4,500. But I want to get that out there. Just, you know, I need to keep promoting that with my name on it. Like if this doesn't go well, Pete, I don't know how good of a look that's going to be. But if it goes well, I feel like it's a really good look.
There you go. All right. Go sign up for that. Are you going to have any? I was just seeing the lobby. Underdog's got the scramble, the PGA. Best ball 50K to first. You doing some content around that?
Yeah, we put up our first strategy look last week, myself and Byron Lindekew, the model maniac. He built a tool for it, actually, which is really awesome. And we have a tool at fantasynational.com/mail, by the way, if you want to get 20% off. But as along with like all the tools, all the lineup generators, all that stuff, we actually have a season planner. And what Byron and I both figured out when we were doing the drafts, like, when I try to like learn a new game, I don't know how you guys do it. I like to go in cold and do one without knowing anything. It's probably a waste of the first like $100 when you do it, but you get a sense of where people are going and why people are drafting it. And then, you know, you're looking at the rules and you start to figure some different things out. And the one thing that we figured out and why people are doing it wrong in PGA best ball, at least at this point, is they're just drafting the best players, which, you know, intuitively seems like a really good idea. But the way that the actual scoring works by quadrant in order to advance, you need some crappy golfers because they play in the crappy tournaments. You don't want to have 10 guys that are all playing in the same tournaments. Then you're just leaving 0 points for half the tournaments when you could just easily collect Patrick Rogers and Bo Hostler with your final 4 picks and just rake at all these other ones when people are scoring zeros. So that's the mistake that people are making right now. So the schedule planner comes in handy at Fantasy National. You'd be like, oh, these guys are committed to this tournament. These guys are committed to this tournament. Like Tony Finau ends up becoming a really good pick because he doesn't go over to Europe to play like Rory does. He plays at Torrey Pines, which is not an elevated event. He plays in Mexico. He's like the only good player who plays in Mexico. He goes down there and plays that. Well, he's playing all the elevated events too. He's just going to play a ton. Those are the guys you actually want to have.
Love it. Little alpha there for the Underdog golf heads.
The playoffs on Underdog. Any playoff seems to be a decent where you can get a decent edge. We talked about Dan and me and Davis talked about this yesterday. What percentage do you guys think? I'll tell you what we guessed. Do you think are dead lineups in NFL playoff gauntlet, right? Like, because, and Pat, I don't know
dead,
if you know,
dead it's to more, win first place or dead to make the finals or how
dead to win first, dead to win first,
like at the onset of the playoffs.
At the start, well,
at the end of the draft,
let me just like this, what the idea here is, and I think Pete will agree, is like guys don't know that they need to draft, like, you know, you can't take teams. I'm going to forget all the rules, but you can't like take teams who are playing each other in the first game or whatever. You need to get as many guys as you can who are going to play against each other in the Super Bowl. Right. I have whatever it is, Pete, yeah. Those rules. And just like a ton of people don't know this. And so they're just dead. Like they have no
I would guess 70% of teams.
No, okay, that's higher than we guess, Pete.
I think Pat's right for contest right now because there's what people making strategy mistakes, and there are just so many landmines too because of how the schedule is going to shake out. I think once everything's solidified, and then you have that information, it's still probably like 40-50% of people are probably dead on arrival.
I don't know if we made the caveat of first only. I think we just said dead.
Oh, by the time, like, I would guess the people drafting now are dead.
Well,
the like, people. What if Indy sneaks into the playoffs and Indy goes to the Super
because
Bowl?
Because
they're
like,
all on an equal playing field.
It's going to fail.
Everyone's early. Yeah.
It's going to fail tomorrow or something. So everyone's on the same playing field. But yeah. But the point being is a lot of those best ball contests that don't have correlation, and PGA can have correlation sometimes with weather and stuff, but. It's tough to get a huge edge in those, the non-correlated ones, but the playoff structures, man, I feel like you can get a ton of edge by just not screwing up that basic strategy. And like, you just reminded me of that with the PGA, one's probably not as large as NFL's playoff structure, but maybe so, you know, I bet there's probably a huge chunk of guys who are not looking at who's playing what event coming up.
Yeah, no, I almost guarantee you no one is, or it's so early on now that anyone doing it is actively seeking out advice. And I think that Byron and I are the only people who have put out any sort of content really serious about it so far. So if they've watched us and then they're entering it, then they probably know. So maybe, because just PGA is just not, the last PGA event of this year is happening right now. Now the season ends and we go over Christmas time. So I guess more people will be jumping in probably at Christmas time. The one and done is a lot of fun. We're going to be doing a ton of stuff on this, but we do have that best ball show up on Mayo Media Network right now. It came out earlier this week.
I think too, Brad, like that's one of the when you talk about the edge in underdog contests, you know, one, just the time commitment, right? So that's always going to be there. A lot of people, it doesn't scale well, but there is the secondary edge in that so many people's relationship with underdog is they love how easy it is to draft a team on the go on your phone. It's so easy to do it, which means you aren't locked in. You're not looking at a schedule helper. You're not looking at the in-game syndicate optimal rates for how to stack your quarterback this week. And so if you are willing to be a desktop drafter or have that actually put some effort into it, like there's a ton of dead teams just from that perspective of like, it's so fun to draft one on my phone. And that's the other nice thing. Like we keep a lot of the sim bros out of there, you know, they don't want to spend the time. And then you have so many casual drafters.
That's true. That's a good point. Yeah. No, I wasn't saying no edge. I'm saying just the edge you can realistically gain for the time put in. Depends on the draft. Some of the drafts are pretty fast, but yeah, if you're sitting there for, you know, at your computer for a couple hours, you know, you want to be able to realize a decent, you know, more than a Starbucks job, right? You know, something like that. So like, but there is, and like, especially now, Pete, you mentioned just a couple things. Also combos you should be looking at. Pat mentioned a good thing too, like the bottom range of non-correlated sports, a lot of times in like PGA, guys just aren't getting picked at all who like clearly should be in your portfolio if you're doing a bunch of drafts. So like ownership percentage, go ahead.
Yeah, like this year, like they just changed the PGA Tour card rules of like who gets to play in what tournaments, like even in the loser tournaments. Like the 10 guys that just qualified from the DP World Tour are like really good and they're coming over to play, but they don't get into any of the good events. So like my guy, Thirsty Lawrence, Tom McKibben, like all these guys are coming over. Like 90% of people in these drafts don't even know who those guys are.
It's my last point. Another thing about the best ball things. If let's say in you're doing a BBM draft and some donkey picks, you know, Baker Mayfield first overall or something, and it's like underdog reviews it and they go, oh, we're gonna throw it out, right? Even though the guy's just a huge Baker Mayfield fan, they shouldn't have thrown it out. You actually get to keep those guys in the playoff versions of underdog, because they don't throw those out, right? They don't go, oh, this guy's drawn dead, like he can't win. They don't throw him out though. So like, it's pretty sweet to get that donkey money. That's like a big part of what gambling is just donkeys not knowing what they're doing. And in underdog regular BBM, they're kind of strict, where we Pete and I want them to like, hey, listen, guys make dumb moves all the time. You got to let them screw up and keep those drafts going. Well, they do that in the playoff version. So you can actually get a pretty good edge.
And for golf, it's going to work out that way too, because honestly, even people that are like serious about golf, they know like 20 players. That's it. They know the guys that play in majors.
Yeah. All right, Pat, anything else you want people to check out over on the Pat Mayo Media Network?
Yeah, I mean, Mayo Media Network, Pat Mayo Experience Pod. We're doing a bunch of different stuff next week for Thanksgiving. I'm going to have Monday morning regular show, Sunday night regular show, but then we're going to do DraftKings preview for Black Friday and the Thanksgiving slate. We're going to do two spread shows, two best bet shows. We're going live at 10 a.m. Eastern on Thursday, but no Friday show. It's going to be a mix and match next week to make sure that people get enough of the content out early and divvy up the content between Thanksgiving, Black Friday, and Sunday, because I found that content wise it rates better that way, and it doesn't alienate people the same way too. Like if someone wants to listen to the spread show, even though they could just skip ahead and use the time codes on Friday, if they hear the first game is the Thanksgiving game, they just tune out. So I've tried to separate those.
Yeah, that reminds me, probably no lulls next week, Brian, because it'll be Thanksgiving.
Oh, yeah.
For us there. Anything else going on over at In-Game Syndicate this week?
No, we're trying. We're trying to get the playoff best ball tool stuff going. So, Pete, if you have any suggestions for that, by the way, feel free.
Yeah,
I imagine Dan's gonna drop his optimal ranking soon enough, maybe today, tomorrow, for this weekend.
Yeah, I'm gonna go record my Deposit Kingdom video for Battle Royale picks for week 12, and I'm giving a shout out to those in the video. Highly recommend that if you guys are playing any kind of volume on BR. It's a very valuable info that Nerdy has been posting in the In-Game Syndicate Discord. As for me, we got the Shipcast tonight. Fun one. Mark Sessler, who is now under the Underdog umbrella with Dan Hansis and their podcast, Heed the Call. He's a big Browns fan. He's coming on. Nez from the Badge Bros, a big Steelers fan. He's going to swing by. And speaking of being bad at pick'ems, we have this giveaway. When we hit our core picks, we give it out, and yet it keeps rolling over each week because we haven't hit in so long. So tonight's giveaway is $800 if we hit that. So, what?
Darnell Washington, higher than 10.5 receiving yards.
Okay, I did see that one in the lobby. All right. I like it. Yeah, Fantasy Life hasn't projected for 15.3. All right. I don't hate it. And then, otherwise all my DFS shows tomorrow. And I know some people, I'm not going to be on it because I have stuff to do on Thursdays, but the Swolecast is now doing a premium show for YouTube members on Thursday afternoon. So if you guys want something to go watch, they're kicking off with Leone here in about 25 minutes or so.
You know, if Pat had breast, I might have listened to that pick, but I'm not going to listen.
All right, guys, this has been fun. Like I said, probably no lulls next week. Probably definitely no lulls next week, yeah, with Thanksgiving. Maybe you can swing by the ship chasing Wednesday night spectacular if they want their brick fix.
I think you should do lulls next week. I think both of you should bring a family member that you don't agree with after a few beer onto the show and just broadcast that live.
Yeah. Incredible. Yes, exactly. All right, guys. Thank you for hanging out in the chat. Thank you to Pat for joining us. Don't gamble beyond your means. Don't get addicted to pot.
Not financial advice.
And if you go to Portugal, it might be legal, but it doesn't mean it's good for you. We'll see you next time.
How do you feel when you switch to GEICO and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, Happy Friday! Then you check your phone quickly and discover today is actually Friday. So yes, Happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico. How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, Happy Friday! Then you check your phone quickly and discover today is actually Friday. So yes, Happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico.